Hello there. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt, and I just want to start this episode off with a really special message. I've done this a few times in the past, and I've only ever done them when I've had really good reason to do so. This episode, episode 65, was already recorded and ready to go out earlier this week, and in the episode I had talked about the situation with Battle Games Magazine. But when I found out about the new outcome for the magazine, I knew that I needed to either re-record that segment of the show or do something different. So I actually had considered deleting the whole section of this episode that deals with the Battle Games Magazine situation and then re-recording it. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought that you might like to hear my thoughts about the situation back from when I, like the rest of us, thought that Battle Games would no longer be available in print format. I am ecstatic to say that Battle Games has been saved. Henry Hyde, editor of Battle Games Magazine, had released a letter both on the Battle Games website, on Facebook, and also via email to subscribers and those who are members of the Battle Games newsletter. In his email, he says that Battle Games has been acquired, or rather will be acquired. They're still finishing up the details, but will be acquired by Atlantic Publishers. They are the makers of Miniature War Games magazine, plus several model railroading titles. As part of this, all existing subscriptions will be honored by Atlantic. That means that Battle Games is going to have a secure and long-term future. Henry is going to remain as a primary contact point, and he's also going to remain as the editor and in charge of all style situations. He won't own it anymore because Atlantic will, but he will still be the guy in charge for what happens with the magazine. Henry had said that as part of this, issues will appear more regularly than ever before, that the style and the content will remain independent and virtually unchanged, since he will be the head honcho for that, that all subscriptions will be honored and nobody will lose any money paid, and that after the official handover date, all financial transactions will be then transferred to Atlantic Editions Limited, which is a company that owns, will be owning Battle Games and owns Miniature War Games, and a few other titles. All of this is likely to happen around Christmas or New Year's at the latest, so you can expect to see all of that coming to fruition by then. I know that Henry is very thankful for all of the support and the thoughtful and encouraging words that people had sent to him, whether they were sent via email or posted on, you know, social media, on internet message boards like TMP or wherever. In his letter, he in particular wanted to thank Andrew Hubeck of Miniature War Games, who was the one who kind of introduced Henry and put things together so that Henry could then negotiate this deal. He also wanted to thank the editors of War Games, Soldiers, and Strategy, Jasper Orthez and Guy Bowers, the people over at War Games Illustrated, which is another magazine I love, and I know I'm going to butcher this, but the title is Andati E. Piombo. He said all of them had expressed their personal support, and he was most appreciative of that. I, of course, am ecstatic about this. Battle Games is my favorite gaming magazine. It is really, I feel, the best there is out there. It has a perfect blend of great text, great editing, great pictures, great maps. It puts it all together. It gives you how-to. It covers battle reports and reviews, and I mean, just everything. And the price can't be beat. Plus, it exists digitally and in print format. Both of those will continue with the new publishers. So I am ecstatic about it. On our blog, wargamingforums.com, I did a blog article about the situation. And it went live, actually, noon today. By the time you're reading this, it might not be the same day that it went live, but it went live on November 15th at noon. And since then, I've already received several comments. At the start of my article, I quote Professor Farnsworth from the Futurama series, and I say, "Good news, everybody!" One of the comments was from Adrian B., who said that this is definitely good news, and he posted a link to a YouTube compilation video of clips from Futurama where Professor Farnsworth says, "Good news, everybody!" And then there was another comment from Drew M., And Drew says that, quote, great news, well, not a magazine I read due to my not playing this particular style of game. I think the contribution to the community can't truly be measured. I'm glad they'll be keeping Mr. Hyde on. This will allow for a sense of continuity for the longtime readers and subscribers. I want to thank both Drew and Adrian for their comments on the blog. I encourage all of you to head on over to wargamingforums.com and read the blog post. As you know, this podcast comes out every other week, but more frequent updates as I have updated information will be made available on the blog, wargamingforums.com. Plus, I will also make that available on Twitter and on Facebook, where we also exist, so you can be sure to find all of that. Anyway, I just want to thank you for listening to this early message for the show, and at this point, I'm going to hand things back over to the episode as previously recorded. So, thank you, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hello, and welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Today we have a jam-packed episode for you. We are going to be talking about the situation with the Battle Games magazine's shutdown. We want to remind you about our TotalCon contest. We're going to be reviewing the War Games Illustrated special issue of Great War Games. We're going to have a little bit of information about some potential upcoming guests. And we're going to finish things off with our mailbag. So the first topic of discussion is Battle Games magazine. Some of you may be aware that about a week and a half ago or so, that Henry Hyde, who is the owner and editor of Battle Games Magazine, released a letter both on his website and via email to subscribers stating that he would no longer be operating the magazine, that the print version of the magazine would unfortunately have to come to a close. He just can't proceed printing the magazine anymore. He cited numerous reasons why, but basically it comes down to the fact that there are increased costs for printing and that there's not enough of financial support to maintain its continued existence. He had stated that for quite a while that he had been, you know, making up the difference with his own money, that he had been kind of keeping it afloat just by, you know, injecting some of his own funds for it, but that because he's been doing this and he's been doing it for so long that he's not able to continue to just keep on shooting money into the magazine. This magazine's been around for over 6 years. It is perhaps one of the best wargaming magazines out there right now. Henry has done a superb job of creating innovative ways, culturing fantastic articles, great writing talent, and just a bevy of people to participate in this magazine, to write for it, submit articles and pictures and ideas and everything that have made it an interesting and really helpful periodical to purchase. The price has always been reasonable. There's been fantastic ads in there from, you know, game manufacturers and rules designers that people would want to purchase and play and try out. So he's covered all his bases, but wargaming is a small area of publishing, and publishing as a whole is kind of undergoing this whole change. Some of you may know that I work at a library, and as a result of that, I kind of keep my eye out on what's going on with e-publishing, e-books, and changes to the traditional publishing format. So a lot of these larger organizations like Houghton Mifflin and Penguin Books and, you know, just like the big, big publishers, they're having a lot of trouble, too, with their finances of traditional print format materials. They're having to transition to digital formats, whether it's like an ebook or whatever, print on demand, you know, other ways of marketing and making these books and materials available for people. So if a large organization such as, you know, Houghton Mifflin or whoever is having trouble, some of these big publishers are having issues with traditional format, you can only imagine how difficult it is for a small one-man show like Henry to put out a magazine and to put it out in a print format. It's very, very difficult. So he's done, I would say, the best he could for as long as he had. Battle Games is a fantastic magazine, but unfortunately, its days of print format are gone. There's been a lot of talk about it, both online and offline. We kind of, I feel, were one of the first to talk about it through an article on our blog titled Breaking News, Battle Games Magazine is Ceasing Publication. We beat out TMP, we beat out to everyone else. As far as I know, I couldn't find any other location. And we, you know, quoted Henry's article and gave a few thoughts about it. There are some places online, some internet forums and some other websites that have talked about this situation with Battle Games Magazine. I know, for example, that Neil Shook of Meeples and Miniatures has a blog post up about the situation. He's become very close with Henry, and he's a huge fan of Battle Games Magazine. He routinely says it's one of his favorite in existence. And I know that he will be having Henry sometime in the near future as a guest, and they will be talking about what's going on with the Battle Games Magazine situation and everything. I also know he has an update from his original post where he talks about some news that Henry had released, which I'm going to be getting to in a minute. But first I want to kind of talk about some of the negative reaction to this situation. I'm very saddened by this. Battle Games is one of my favorite magazines. Henry is a great guy. I've gotten to know him better as a result of the magazine, from communicating with him, sending him emails. He's been a guest here on the show, so we've gotten to talk that way. He's been very supportive of what I'm doing here. He's offered prizes for people as a result of contests and for giveaways, and he's given me sneak peeks at, you know, previous issues and just all sorts of stuff. Plus, aside of all that, you can tell that Henry is the kind of guy that he is because he's helped to raise over £10,000 for the Combat Stress Appeal. Combat Stress is a charity based in the United Kingdom. They deal with combat stress, also known as post-traumatic stress disorder, where they try to just support those who have served and help them, you know, transition from the combative military situation where maybe they had to kill someone, maybe they saw someone they become close to, a friend, another, you know, person at arms, someone hurt, or, you know, these tough traumatic situations, and help them to deal with those, but then transition back into civilian life. And it's not an easy thing. Anyone who's read at all about the Vietnam War and what had happened with the veterans from there, and the fact of the PTSD, World War One, with, you know, shell shock, PTSD and combat stress, it's a real disease, it's a real disorder. People who have it, they need help. And Henry's done his part. He's done his walk, which was sponsored. He's raised money through Battle Games Magazine, through his website. In any way he can, he's helped to support combat stress. And they, as a result of Henry, he's raised over £10,000. And that's money that can be used to help hire, you know, staff there, to treat people, to help people. So Henry's done a lot. He hasn't just, you know, sat on his backside and said, oh, look, I'm going to write myself another article and push out this magazine or whatever. Like, he's making a difference. He's made a difference, and he's continuing to make a difference. So Henry's done all that, and, you know, he's used that, the type of guy he is, he's put it into his magazine as well. He's used all this to create a superior product. He's networked with anyone who's in the know in the industry. He's actually in one of the rule books. I believe it's The Last Argument of Kings for Black Powder with the Perry brothers. And I mean, he knows people, he knows everyone, and it's helped to enrich his publication. But there's been some negative comments about the fact that he's closing the magazine, or at least the print version of it. And people, I mean, right or wrong, you know, there are people like myself who have subscribed to the magazine, and our subscriptions are being cut off. We're not going to receive any new issues. The last one that was out is the last one that was out. There are some people who had subscribed since then, and they haven't gotten any issues. Now, Henry's in a situation where financially he's not able to give any money back to people. So, you know, if you just bought a subscription, you're not getting your money back. But what he is doing, he's trying to make right, and he's doing it because he's a good guy, and he knows that he needs to do something. So he's offered people some choices on what you could do. And one of the things he's offered is that although he can't give you any money, he's willing to give you, you know, whatever the equivalent value is of your remaining subscription, and that you will get that either in paper copies of previous issues of the magazine or the tabletop teasers. Some of these things are, you know, out of stock. They're sold out. They're no more. And what's left is subject to availability. You could get the equivalent value in PDF issues of the magazine, either as a download or on a CD. And I have a digital subscription. The magazine is fantastic digitally. I've never had a problem with it in the digital format. I've read it on an iPad, on a computer. I mean, you could print it out if you wanted to. So digital is fantastic for this magazine. You could also get the equivalent value of your subscription and a new digital subscription if it's proven that he can continue the magazine that way, which is what I'm hoping. Or you could just decide that you want to waive the rest of your subscription and that's that. You're not going to get anything. He doesn't have to send you anything. And that's that. And this issue right here of not making financial restitution and money is one of the complaints that people have been making about this situation. They've kind of talked about four different areas of comments. And in reading all the different comments, I have taken them and I've kind of posted what really is, I guess, another blog article, but I posted it as a comment onto my blog posting about the magazine closing down. Some people had posted comments before that, basically saying that they were sad about the magazine closing, that they were hoping that he might be able to somehow continue through maybe a digital format, whether it's, you know, less frequent or whatever. But people just been hoping that he's able to continue on. And so I had kind of remarked about the what I see as four categories of negative comments. And I've seen these online, the different comments, and I don't think they're all justified. I can understand people being upset and being mad and being sad about it. And, you know, maybe have an outrage because some people are out of money and some people are out. Your magazine's gone is what it is. So you're having all these different emotions. But I think people need to really just give Henry time to get things in order and come out with something and wait and see what he has. So the four categories of comments basically are, the first one I mentioned was that people feel he should be making restitution to subscribers. And people have been upset because they say that, you know, he's not giving the money back. He's not giving a monetary refund, and that's what they want. But he is giving, you know, a refund. He's trying to make do. So he's offering these four options, which I think are really good. He's not, you know, just saying, well, I got your money and forget you and I don't want to do anything for you because the business is bust. He's saying, do you know what? Despite my best efforts, I can't save this business. And I know that you are also out. So I want to do what I can so that I can, you know, give you some sort of value for what you had paid for. And he's doing that by offering you product. I mean, if you subscribed, it's presumably because you like the magazine and you want the magazine. So if you like what you've seen, then get, you know, physical copies of the tabletop teasers or previous issues of the magazine. Get past PDF issues. You can get it on a CD, get it as a download. Or, you know, say I want to transition into a digital subscription. And if enough people choose that option, maybe Henry will be able to convert things over and allow the magazine to continue as a digital sub. I do have to say that in his letter, Henry said that as a result of everything, he has to go back to his old job, being a graphic designer in order to make ends meet. So he's not going to be able to have the magazine be a 24/7 job like he had in the past. But I believe Henry will make time for it if it proves to be viable. He's not going to just say that's an option, and if enough people do it, say, never mind, I'm not going to do it, because that's not how he is. Some of the other comments kind of fall under a category of that people felt he should have been placing the magazine first instead of his new book that's coming out and some of his other projects. And, I mean, we don't really know what the finances of the magazine were. It's a private entity, and there's no way to know exactly how much was coming in, how much was going out. But my thought is that Henry may have realized that, you know, he needed to try to keep the magazine afloat. So one way that he was trying to do that was by using his various talents to take on different paying jobs that would basically supplement the income. So whether it's making box art for, you know, some models that are coming out or editing a book or whatever, I think he saw that and said, oh, do you know what? These are things I like to do, but I will do those because I will then get the money, and that will then help me to continue to keep the magazine going. And I don't know if that's true or not. Henry hasn't told me, you know, his thoughts on any of this. But these are just things that I'm thinking, my own conjecture about the situation. So I don't think he was saying, well, forget people who subscribe to Battle Games. I want to go ahead and want to write my book. I want to do box art. I want to do editing. I think he thought, oh, do you know what? I'm going to write a book. I'm going to do editing. I'm going to do box art, so that I can then continue Battle Games and, you know, fulfill my promise to subscribers of maintaining this quality publication. People also have felt that they thought maybe he should have realized sooner that the magazine was going to be going the way of the dodo, and that, you know, he shouldn't have been taking subscription orders anymore. And I think with this that Henry was thinking, well, you know, things are a little iffy, but that if he just continued to get some more subscribers, then maybe things would improve. So would I have done what he did? I don't know. But it is what he did. And I think it could be reasonable, figuring, you know, if I just got a few more subscribers or however many more that he needed, maybe it was really close, that it wouldn't hurt to keep it open, because that's a main revenue source. And it would be kind of dumb to shut down one of your revenue sources when you're thinking, well, I need to increase revenue to keep this publication going. I need to keep this magazine going. So why would you say, no, not going to allow you to subscribe anymore? Up until the point where he released the letter that said the magazine's done, you could subscribe, and I think it was the right thing to do. And as soon as that letter went out, he removed all those sections of the Battle Games website, so it no longer was possible to purchase a subscription. He was doing everything above board, as far as I feel. And in addition to that, people felt that he should have given notification sooner that the magazine could have potentially been shut down. Now, I don't know how far back people have been reading the magazine, but I have a subscription. I have the motherlode, so I've read every single issue of this magazine. And if you look all the way back in 2008, in issue 15, there's what you could consider to be a notification or warning. And it's in the editorial, and in that editorial, Henry states, and I'm quoting him, "My ability to keep Battle Games at this new and beefier size is dependent on the continued support of the advertisers and your response to those advertisements." He also talks about, in that same issue, that there's an increase in the cover price because there are rising overheads, and the magazine is, quote, "a very small minnow in this vast economic sea." And then on issue 16 in the editorial, he also says about this issue that issue 16 has, quote, "fewer pages than last time, but that is purely because the massive increase in advertising that we saw in the previous pre-Christmas issue has subsided again like the waves receding on the beach," end quote. So if you had been reading those issues, if you had seen those before, those quotes that in those editorials, maybe you could have considered those to be a notification that the magazine is dependent on ads, is dependent on people, you know, responding to those ads and saying, hey, I like that product, I'm going to get that. And then telling the advertisers that, you know, I saw your ad in Battle Games, and then I went and I bought your product because of that. And doing that would have allowed them to continue ads in the magazine. Now, is that an explicit, hey guys, you know, without advertisers, without subscriptions, and with the increased costs, I'm not going to be able to keep this afloat? No, but I think any reasonable person could have read that and seen, oh, you know, things are precarious with this. You know, margins must be tight, and you know, what I do matters. So if I'm doing something as a result of this magazine, this publication, maybe I should tell its advertisers, its sponsors, that I like what's going on and that I did something because of that. And that will let them know that it's important for them to continue to support that publication. And it's the same way with just about anything else, whether it's a game store where you hang out at, the gaming club, this podcast, blogs, or whatever, if you see that places are sponsoring them, or they're reviewing things, or you're doing stuff there, you need to continue to support them and let them know that you're supporting them. Because otherwise, for all, you know, the next time you want to go there, use them, or access it, that maybe they would be having a shutdown too, like Battle Games did. So, I don't know, but I would consider that a sufficient warning that Henry had placed both in issue 15 and 16 of the magazine. So those were the four main categories of comments that I had seen. Now, since then, Henry had released an update about his situation, and he received a lot of feedback from people. He got over 1,000 emails, and as a result of his emails, he's actually working on something, which he couldn't say, but he said that he's in, quote, negotiations with third parties aimed at providing a future for the magazine, end quote. Since he's in negotiations, he said that he can't talk about any details. I don't know who he's negotiating with. I don't know what the details are. I don't know what he's trying to do. But I have some theories. One theory is that another publication that puts out gaming magazines and historical magazines might be trying to pick Battle Games up. And I don't want to release a name, but I do want to give a hint on who I think it is. It's a company that has covered, Roman Times on up, and they just brought back a publication from the dead. And I just, for some reason, I get a feeling that this publication might be in talks with Henry. But you know what? It could be literally just about anyone, because Henry knows many people in the industry, and many, many, many people love Battle Games magazine. So maybe one of these people he knows, one of the people who love the magazine, talked to someone, and maybe that's resulted in these negotiations. I don't know if it's one or more third parties, and I just, no one knows the details except for Henry and the people he's talking with. But, I mean, Battle Games could come around and continue on in some format, venue, or, I mean, who knows, but I've read that, and I thought that was pretty cool, that maybe there's hope for the magazine. It's going to take some time, and, you know, in his update, Henry did ask for people to give him some time. He also asked that he's, you know, received over 1,000 emails. I'm one of the people who sent him an email with encouraging words and, you know, support. And he asked that, you know, just to give him time, because he's not going to be able to reply to all the emails. There's just so many of them and so much communication that, you know, if it's urgent, he's going to, you know, respond and you can contact him as usual. But otherwise, he's trying to organize things. He's trying to figure out what's going on with Battle Games so that he can then release that information and then trying to get things in order. But this whole Battle Games situation is probably some of the biggest news for those of us who are considered, you know, old-time wargamers or new to the whole old-time wargaming, just wargamers in general, because Battle Games is, I mean, it's fantastic. It's done a lot. So as we find out more, I will release that information to you, whether it's on our blog or Facebook, Twitter, or here on the podcast. But I just have to say that, you know, Henry, if you're listening, and I know you've listened in the past, that, you know, I'm here to support you, and I can only imagine how awful it's been for you dealing with all this. So just know there are people out there who, you know, care and support you, love the magazine, and want to continue to be around. And I know that I would love to continue to subscribe as long as the magazine exists. So I just hope for the best. And, you know, maybe sometime down the road might be able to get you, Henry, to agree to come here on the show and, you know, talk about what went on with the magazine, or just talk in general. Love chatting with you. And I know the listeners love chatting with you too, because your episode was one of the most popular episodes here on the show. I did a little blog article not too long ago called Podcasting by the Numbers, where I just kind of covered the most popular episodes of all time. And Henry, your episode was the fourth most popular of all time with over 143 downloads. So I think that's pretty impressive. People clearly are interested in what you have to say, and I know I am. And, you know, we're here for you, so we hope for the best. We really do. Well, enough about Battle Games Magazine. Let's move on to talking about something a little cheerier, and that would be the TotalCon contest. So, the kind people at TotalCon have provided some fantastic prizes for me to give away to you, the listeners. And we have, and I'm actually just pulling them out right here because they're, like, really fancy. I have four passes to TotalCon 2012. The first one is a weekend pass. It covers you for the entire weekend. And then there are 3 day passes. Each of these are free. They cover, you know, for that. And you can win them. Now, how do you win them, you're thinking? Well, it's really, really easy. And honestly, there's no reason for you to not participate in this contest. All you have to do is send an email to me at cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. And in your email, you need to tell me what your favorite Civil War game is, American Civil War, that is, and why. I'm preferring to find what your favorite electronic American Civil War game is, you know, a game for the computer or console gaming. But any type of American Civil War game is good, whether it's a board game, miniatures game, card game, whatever. So just tell me what your favorite ACW game is and the reason why, and then one of you will win the free weekend pass. The 3 other people will win free day passes, and I will look forward to seeing you guys at the con. And hopefully, but this is not a requirement, it's just, you know, a hope. Hopefully, I will have you participating in the Daybreak at Hangman's Creek game that I will be running. Now, Daybreak at Hangman's Creek, and I'm just kind of transitioning, this wasn't on my list to talk about, but it fits in here, is a scenario for Black Powder. I'm going to be running it with Court N and Adrian B. They're both listeners here on the show. Hey, guys. We've been approved and accepted by the TotalCon board to run that game. It's going to be a 15mm American Civil War game using the Black Powder rules. Starts at 3 o'clock on that Saturday of the con. Please, 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 please sign up for the game. It should be a lot of fun. The 3 of us have been getting together and, you know, playtesting it and getting things in order and making terrain and this and that and everything and stuff. So we're looking forward to playing it. You don't really have to know how to play Black Powder. It's not like an expert level game, but it's also not a tutorial. We are going to teach you how to play and walk you through some sort of wargaming or miniatures gaming knowledge would be useful, but not necessary. All you have to do is show up. We're, of course, providing everything. The models, table, you know, all of it will be there. And you just show up and get ready to roll some dice. We can accommodate 6 players. We need at least 2 in order to play. It's the Union versus the Confederates. A really cool made-up scenario, which you can find in the Black Powder book. And we kind of modified it just a little bit to keep it interesting. But basically, the Union forces are in this town, and they're kind of in disarray because they're getting in and they're kind of sleeping, whatever, but the whole group of Union forces hasn't yet arrived. So there are some in an army camp, some over at this, like, gun foundry, and then, like, of course, the commanders are all, like, you know, jazzing it up in the town. But little do they know, but some Confederate forces are coming over the hill for a sneak attack. So the Union has to rally and prevent the Confederates from taking any objectives. There are 3 objectives on the board. If the Confederates take 1, it's a minor victory. 2, it's a victory. And 3, it's an overwhelming victory. And they basically, you know, pave the way to move on Washington. So it's going to be a really cool game. It's a lot of fun. Black Powder is a blast. I've talked about it on this show quite a bit. I played it, you know, up at Hazar and numerous other times. So Black Powder is fantastic. Hopefully, you'll be able to make it to TotalCon, which is in Mansfield. It's going to be in February, I believe, of 2012. And I look forward to seeing you there. Hopefully you play in the game or, you know, at least stop by and see what's going on. And if you get one of the passes as a result of the TotalCon contest, thank you again, TotalCon. You know, maybe you'll use the pass and then end up signing up for the game. So that would be really awesome. And just, we're looking forward to it. We've been having a lot of fun preparing for it. I've been talking about it on the blog and on Facebook and stuff and posting pictures and everything, so you can kind of get a sneak peek of it. And if you're interested in doing some playtesting of it, we're playing at Battleground Games and Hobbies in Abington, usually on Saturday afternoons. So you're more than welcome to come down and kind of get a sneak peek at the game and see what's going on. So that is the Total Con contest and Daybreak at Hangman's Creek at Total Con 2012. Thank you again, Angela and Steven and all of you over at Total Con. You guys are fantastic. I can't say enough nice things about all of you. So thank you. Right now, we want to move into talking about a special issue of Wargames Illustrated magazine. And Wargames Illustrated has released their very first special issue of the magazine. It's titled Great Wargames, and this just came out this past week. So I actually want to review it, and you probably hear me flipping some pages. And sorry about that noise, but the reason why I'm flipping pages is as I went through the issue earlier today, I, of course, made notes so I could talk to you about some of the good, the bad, the ugly, and so forth of the magazine. So this issue is costing $9 American, and it came out this week. As I said, it's a limited edition issue. I have to say, if you're interested in getting it, please go to your local hobby shop and pick it up. There's only so many copies of it available, so you're going to want to get one. And what it is, it's dedicated to game tables. It has tons of pictures. I think they say there's over 300 pictures, over 380 photographs, rather, of different gaming tables. And it covers everything from ancient wargaming up to Vietnam, with pictures of the game tables and models. And it has little blurbs of information about the tables. Most of the tables are ones you will have seen in previous issues of Wargames Illustrated. There are some that are brand new. You won't have seen them before unless you went to an event where they were at, but they never graced the pages of Wargames Illustrated. Now, this magazine, as I said, it covers all those different ages. And, you know, when I flipped it up, I got to say, like the magazine, wonderful glossy paper, color photographs. It's color from cover to cover, full pages, lots of pictures. And, I mean, that's what you're getting it for. But I was kind of surprised. Like, I was looking at the, you know, the contents. And I noticed, like, for example, that there are no 1700s battles in here at all. They start off with the Ancients with the Antonine Wall, which is kind of like a baby brother version of Hadrian's Wall. And it goes all the way up to Vietnam. But there's nothing like no American War of Independence, no French and Indian War, nothing that took place in the 1700s. And I thought that was kind of odd. I also thought it was odd, considering that Wargames Illustrated is owned by Battlefront, who puts out Flames of War, that there were only two World War II tables. It seemed a little odd. And then conversely, I was surprised by how many Napoleonic tables there were. And there are six total. I know Napoleonics is big business, and I know it's one of perhaps the most popular era of historical gaming, wargaming, that there is. But still, I thought it was odd. There's six tables for that, only one for Ancients, two for World War II. And then you have some weird things in here. You got some, you know, colonial, which is really, they got like the Sudanese War, the Modest War in there. There's only two for the Civil War, and this year is the big Civil War, American Civil War anniversary. So I was really surprised by that. I know there's only so many pages in this magazine. There's about 123, I believe, total. But, I don't know. They fit a lot of different tables in. But the numbers of tables and what was missing just kind of surprised me. Plus, when you get into it, some of the tables they give more pages to than others, which, I mean, that makes sense. But some of the ones that they did seemed a little odd to me. Like, there was one, and I'm just kind of flipping to it now. It is the Italo-Ethiopian War of 1935 to 36. And they gave this table a total of six pages. That's six full-color pages. Whereas some of the other ones only got, you know, one or two pages. And they were tables that I thought maybe deserved more. So I was a little dumbstruck by that, actually. I also want to say that overwhelmingly, the pictures are clear and beautiful and fantastic, but there are a couple that I thought weren't entirely clear. Near the beginning of the magazine, on page 12, There was one picture that it just, I don't know, it seemed kind of fuzzy to me. It wasn't as clear as I thought it should have been. Stuff just seemed kind of out of focus. It was the top one. It wasn't as vibrant and crystal clear as some of the other photographs. And then if you get, you can hear me flipping the pages, sorry about that. You get to later on, it's a Battle of Waterloo. Some of the pictures in there weren't as good as I thought they would have been. They were a little, you know, eh. And for a publication where the whole purpose is to have tons of stunning photographs, I was amazed that they would let some of those photographs in. Because some of those pictures, honestly, they look like ones that I take that I put up on the blog. And like for me, that would be good. But for a professional publication like this that goes all over the world, kind of expect better. Yet, you know, three or four, however many pictures that I weren't impressed with, out of the scheme of things, I mean, it's almost 400 photographs total, so the odds are pretty decent there. Now, there's a lot of battles covered in here, and I mean, maybe you're going to be like me and you're going to want to look through them all, and you probably will, but I thought there were some clear highlights in here, some that were just outstanding, you know, head and shoulders above the rest. And there were numerous that I thought were really good. For example, there's the battle of, I'm going to totally butcher this, so rather than butcher it, I'm going to suggest that if you know how to pronounce it, that you send me some sort of communication and let me know so that I won't butcher it next time. But the Battle of Verneuil, it's in 1424, and it's part of the Hundred Years' War. So this was amazing. This is on pages 16 to 19. The Battle of Worcester was another really good one, pages 24 to 27. Battle of Corona was another really good one. This features some water, it features a town, and this is just, I mean, it's a really cool Napoleonic one. A lot of my favorites were from the Napoleonic tables. The Battle of Leipzig, or Leipzig as some people pronounce it, that was just, I mean, that was fantastic. That was on page 56, and they didn't give much space to that, actually. This one, I believe they only gave four pages too. But I thought this was really cool, because with this one here, it's clear that the models are a smaller scale. I think they're maybe 15 millimeter. I could be wrong, though. And I think for Napoleonics, you're probably honestly better off using a smaller scale so you can fit more on the table without having to have like a 70-foot table to fit everything in on a 28mm or 40mm or whatever. And on this particular battle, you know, there's over 500,000 men who fought. And the pictures here and the table do a fantastic job of making it feel like you're actually part of the battle, that it's real. You're not just looking at pictures of a table with some metal and plastic people on it. It seems, you know, amazing. And then, in particular, page 56 and 57 has a double-page spread of the table, and it just shows you the scope of it, how large it is, so immense, and the vast blocks of troops moving all over. And I gotta say, looking at this, I thought, wow, I want to play that with Black Powder Rules. It was just, it was so amazing. The scenery is fantastic. The buildings were amazing. The photography was good. The models looked nice. And it was a really good example of 15mm gaming. So I loved that. Now, of course, I gotta say, the Battle of Waterloo was one of my favorites in here. It's in my top three. Now, I know I said that some of the pictures weren't as great as I expected, and I was surprised by that. But overwhelmingly, the pictures were great, and the table was fantastic. I'm not a historian of Napoleonic gaming, and I'm not an expert exactly how Waterloo was supposed to look or anything, but I gotta say, according to the magazine, it says it's an accurate representation, and the guy who built it did it as part of writing a book titled Who Won Waterloo? It looks pretty darn good to me, and there are pictures in here, tons of pictures. It just fills up this gigantic room in this guy's house. There's almost no room to go around the edges. You need a really thin wargamer to kind of scoot around there. But just tons of table space, and it's fantastic. The buildings are gorgeous. The models are amazing. You get a clear feeling of the scope of this battle, how important it was, and the difficulty of it with the terrain and the changes. And I mean, it's amazing. This is definitely in my top three for this, for the battles displayed here on the tables. which is absolutely amazing. Now, another one, which I gotta say, it was kind of tied. I like it maybe slightly better than the Waterloo one. It's titled The Bloody Crucible of Courage. And this is an American Civil War one. I believe these are 28mm figs. And these pictures, they are so good. They're like model railroading good. This table is amazing. And there's fantastic use of creating. You look everywhere and your eye just kind of roves around. And I can only imagine how wonderful this table was in person. One of the things I really liked was that the person who made it, rather than gluing, say, like tufts of grass or whatever directly onto the table, they have some bases that they made and they put tall grass on them or weeds or whatever so that they could then take those off and put them onto other tables. Now, parts of the table does have, you know, things glued to it, like this field's cotton and trees and so forth and other stuff. But the fact that they realize, you know, hey, I can create this cool thing and it'll work for this battle, but that I can also add stuff onto it and then take it off to use later was really cool. So, I mean, you could look at this issue of War Games Illustrated and just be like, oh, it's pure eye candy. And I mean, it is eye candy. But at the same time, I think you can really get some inspiration from it and learn from it. I saw these pictures and I thought, wow, I need to do that because I'm all about, you know, adding stuff directly to the bases of my models, which I think is cool to do and you should do. And if I tackled the table, I would definitely be like, oh, I should just put the stuff onto the table, make it part of the table. But why not make a little more life out of this and let your table live a little longer by maybe not having everything be glued and adhered directly onto the table? You could just create these little scenery blurbs and, you know, you put them on when you need them and then you take them off and you can put them onto another table. So I thought that was really cool. I also loved the Gallipoli table that they do. It's 1915-16. And this was my third favorite. I think this is perhaps the best board that they have here. It's absolutely amazing. The detail on this is, without a doubt, perhaps some of the best. They portrayed Gallipoli. They have sections of the board that come off to reveal the trenches underneath. The work on the models is so detailed and interesting. There are soldiers, you know, just sitting down playing cards or reading maps or, like, just all sorts of stuff. This one was actually made for War Games Illustrated, and it made an appearance at Salute this year, actually, in London, and Historicon was there. So if you were at either one of those, you saw the table in person. The photography is fantastic. The models are amazing. Everything is so realistic. It's superb. I love it. It is definitely my favorite on here. And then there were two others that were really cool. There's one called Somewhere in the Sudan, and this is part of the Modest Wars, I believe. And this is, I mean, they did a really good job of weathering the buildings, of putting terrain together. The water looks fantastic. And as far as I can tell, they didn't really use any of those water effects. You kind of know when someone's used them because they look extra glossy. And I mean, it's cool and it's an easier way to do it. But I think this was maybe painted on to some sort of putty or clay or something. And it's fantastic. The work on a ship that they have on there, it's a little steamboat paddle ship, is amazing. Everything, it's so detailed and fantastic. And it's a war I probably would never game, but the pictures have me really interested in it. And then the last one is called No Quiet on the Western Front. And it's also a World War I board. And this is absolutely amazing. The detail on here is so good. The trenches are amazing. There's fantastic buildings and little, like, comedic reliefs and character throughout. This one was actually created by Dave Andrews because he has this whole set of World War I models that he's been trying to sell and get people to buy. So he made the table as a backdrop for the models, and it's fantastic. Everything just fits in perfectly, and I absolutely love it. Now, I mean, these were the things I loved. Of course, my three favorites were the Battle of Waterloo, Bloody Crucible of Courage, which was the American Civil War, and Gallipoli, obviously World War I. But then there were some that I did not love as much. And perhaps most surprising were the ones that I didn't love as much include all the ones by Battlefront, which are the owners of the War Games Illustrated. And you'd think if anyone's going to have fantastic boards in a publication, it's going to be boards made by the company that owns the publication. So I was kind of surprised by that. Now, the first one I didn't really care for was the Charge of the Light Brigade. And this is just a really minimalist board. And I guess in some ways that allows you to focus on the fact that the Light Brigade is charging. And, you know, you're just adhering to that. But it's basically a blank board with some kind of hills on either side. And then the models. And the models are fantastic. But it was just so bland. And the only way you knew stuff was there was these gigantic signs. So, like, there's a sign announcing a river, and I mean, the board is green. There's no river there, and you have to imagine it. And I don't know if the board was done this way on purpose, or if maybe they ran out of time, or what it was. The thing I did like the most was there's a picture that shows different times, so that you could use this board as a teaching tool to say, you know, at 11:08, the Light Brigade was here, and 11:09, this happened. So you could use it as a narrative. And I could see, like, a college professor or high school professor, you know, sitting up in the front of class, having this table there, teaching the Light Brigade and using it as an example of warfare, and just going through time by time and allowing the models to provide a visual representation for what happened and allow the kids to get, really just get it. Not everyone learns the same way. Some people are visual learners, so that could appeal to them. But as just like a gaming table, as like a presentation piece, I was underwhelmed. I also didn't really care for the Battle of Probless Heights. And that's a little later in the book. I'm just getting to that. That's what they call 19th century. It's apparently a battle of the Prussian army with Austrian forces. And I mean, you looked at the board, and the board looks kind of decent. But I don't know. I was very underwhelmed. It was so sparse. There wasn't much there, but you could tell that they took some sort of care in creating it. When you compare it with everything else in here, I was not as impressed. And then, I mean, they dedicated 4 pages to it. I don't know. It wasn't really my cup of tea. Then there's another one in here, part of the colonial set that they talk about, and it's titled Wilkinson's Campaign Against the Slavers. Now, I mean, you can tell care was taken here, but things are just so rudimentary. You have this plain blue water area, and then there's a boat, which probably was scratch-built, but I don't know. But it's so bland and one-dimensional. It's basically just base-coated. And, I mean, you can tell that they had purchased stuff and tried to be innovative, transitioning from, like, the beach on and everything. And the board, what's cool about it is that they were able to take stuff off of it so you could get dual use, whether it was, like, this tribal camp or whether it was, you know, where the colonials are. But, I was very underwhelmed. It lacked depth. It lacked some texture and shading. And I don't know if WI was trying to put this in to be like, oh, look how you can use one board to do multiple things, or let's talk about, you know, something that maybe doesn't get talked about that much. But if you're looking for visual appeal, I felt it was lacking here. And I don't know, maybe I just don't get it, but I was just very, very surprised when I came across this. I also didn't really care for as much the Italo-Ethiopian War, which I had mentioned earlier. And that, I don't know, it's just, the table, it didn't excite me. And actually, the board itself, the table, was used for a different one. The guy who did it recycled, so to speak, the terrain from El Cid and used it for this. And I guess maybe that turned me off. But there wasn't a whole lot there. I mean, there's some nice work on the rocky outcropping, which was cool. But by and large, when you compare it with everything else, I was underwhelmed. And then they gave it so many pages, which absolutely bewilders me. Then, next, and this wasn't one that I disliked, but I didn't like it, so I kind of group it here just because I was surprised. And it's the 8 armies in Normandy. And this is Battlefront's own board that they did for Flames of War. It's on the cover of the Flames of War Normandy compilation books. And I mean, it's gorgeous. It's fantastic. They put a lot of detail in it. But what really stuck in my craw was the fact that you have the beaches, and then almost immediately you get into the town and some fields. There's really no bunkers or any of those defensive fortifications. It's just very, very, very little. And I think what they were trying to do was they were trying to show the different stages immediately at Normandy, how you had the landings, and then you move from the landings, and you get right off, and then you get some houses, and you get some towns, and then you get the bocage, and so forth. And I think that's what they were trying to do, because they did that well. But I, you know, someone says eight armies in Normandy, I'm thinking, cool, Normandy landings. And maybe it's my fault for thinking that, but I would have liked more of the beach and a little less of the table being just green fields. And so much of the table was not the beach. It's overwhelmingly just, you know, the fields that they had. And I was very, very, very surprised by that. So I thought it was a little lackluster. Plus, with this and all of the Battlefront tables, I felt the tables were basically there to be made out of and just to showcase their stuff. So all of the buildings on there, I believe, are ones that you can buy that they do. The pillboxes, I know, are the models, I believe, are the trees and stuff might be Woodland Scenics. I'm not positive, which, I mean, as far as I know, they don't own. But overwhelmingly, it looked like, let's just make a board and then put our stuff on it that we sell so we can sell more of it, which, I mean, that turned me off too. And that may not have been it, but it turned me off. So I was not a fan. The next one, A Bridge Too Far, this was the other World War II one. And I don't know, it was so one-dimensional. You know, you're dealing with A Bridge Too Far, and the movie, amazing, fantastic story, and such a disaster, but so much story in there, and the bridge is iconic. And what's a table? Only part of the bridge. Like, you know, if you're doing A Bridge Too Far, you should have the bridge and then a little bit of stuff on either side, not basically town with a little bit of bridge. So I thought that was really odd. I felt that they could have had more of the bridge, and like the painting was just eh. And then lastly, the Vietnam one. I don't really know what they were thinking. Like, they tried, but it didn't feel like Vietnam. I've seen enough Vietnamese movies. My dad fought in Vietnam. And nothing. I mean, they could have had a fantastic table with, like, a Vietnamese fishing village there, and with the choppers coming in and some crash choppers. But instead, they kind of got this green board with some, I don't know, like, corn hay kind of stacks and weeds and stuff going up. And, like, that's basically it. I thought it was very underwhelming. Again, you could tell they put the effort in, but I don't know. It's like the Battlefront just didn't get it. They were like, oh, we'll just put this in and do it, and let's just have this thing so that we can be like, look at all of our models, which you need to buy. And I mean, okay, if that's what you want to do, great. You do that, you put it in a storefront window or whatever. But looking in this, if you're doing a publication showing great tables, you don't put those tables in there, because I'm sorry, Battlefront of War Games Illustrated, they're not great. And maybe you're going to disagree with me. Maybe you're a listener and you think I'm just crazy. And that's your right. But I felt they just didn't stand up to par. Compare those Battlefront tables with the No Quiet on the Western Front. Dave Andrews did a fantastic table. It's absolutely stunning. And he did it to showcase his World War I models that he's trying to sell. And you can tell they're just so different ends of the spectrum. You can see how great Dave Andrews is. And that Battlefront just doesn't live up to the hype. So, overall, the special issue of War Games Illustrated, great War Games. It has great photographs. It has some new content, but most of it you've already seen before in War Games Illustrated. And I think it's a great source of inspiration. Overwhelmingly, there's really good content, some great tables in there. I think it's worth the $9. Like I said, it's a special issue, so you really do need to go and get to your local game store now to get it. As far as I'm told, you're not going to be able to get it anywhere else. You just have to get it through your local hobby retailer. Now, I know we're getting close up to the hour mark, and I like to keep our shows around an hour. I want to just kind of talk about our mailbag. So last time I had released episode 64, which was the first episode of this show to use the new name of Wargaming Recon, and we kind of talked about a bunch of different things and got some feedback. People overall liked the episode. They thought it was interesting and fun, but the number one complaint was that it was perhaps a bit confused. There was a posting, rather comment, on the blog by Tillman, and I just want to quote some of, I'm going to quote your entire comment. It's a little long, but I want to quote it because it touches on a bunch of different areas. So Tillman says, good show, if a bit confused, but that's maybe due to me being unhealthy, and he wishes me well. But he said the biggest point is that the show's back, that he's really gotten used to listening to gaming podcasts while he paints or does other hobby stuff. And he says this one's on the list. Thank you, Tillman. He said that he missed it quite a bit over the last couple of months. In the show, you may recall, I had talked about Army Painter. I gave a little bit of a review of it. And Tillman talks about the Army Painter. He says that he has a can of dark tone, that he's never really gotten the hang of it until he had an accident with white primer that almost ruined an entire box of Perry plastics. Ouch! He had about 40 models just for a big trial of Army Painter. And so he tried some techniques that he saw on this guy Dave Emery's blog, which you can find over at saxondog.blogspot.com. And he said the techniques worked really well. And he said it went pretty fast. And his suggestion is that instead of dipping, to try brushing it on. And I got to say that I got the same recommendation from Chris Walsh over at The Wiz on 9 East in Westboro at the new location. I instead did dipping. Chris, no, you told me to dip, didn't you? I was told to paint it on by Gordon out of their hobby. Sorry, Gordon. And I dipped. I didn't paint on, but I might try that. Tillman says that one of the cool things about painting them on is, first of all, you got to make sure you use some cheap brushes. And don't worry about cleaning them because they're going to last for a few sessions. But that if you brush it on, make sure you do a thinner coat. And then you can vary how much of the Army Painter is on different parts of the model. So that way you can add more shadowing. And some parts will be lighter, some won't be. And that was one of my main complaints, that, you know, just kind of even and didn't have as much contrast as I was thinking. And he also says that anytime the models are dipped with the Army Painter, that they probably need to be retouched, which is what I had done. But that if you do that, you're going to be spending some extra time on it. So if you don't have the time, you got to kind of balance it. But he feels, and I agree, that it's worth the effort. You could just put a couple highlights with the original base colors like on the face, and it'll be much better. And he says that he's not going to use Army Painter exclusively. He likes the old-fashioned way of painting too much. But that if you are short on time and just need to get the job done, he thinks it's worth a go. I got to say, I agree. I am not wowed by Army Painter. But I think their Quick Shade product has a place to be used. I probably will use them again, but I'm not quite sure when. I think I might try the dark tone myself, or like I did before, just instead of using a lighter tone of the color paint that I'm using, I'll just use my standard color because it tends to be like a medium kind of color, and do that, and that way I'll get some of the darker shading that I would like. If you want to check out Tillman's blog, and I suggest you do because it's one of the few gaming blogs that I actively read, you need to head to lead-mountain.blogspot.com, and you'll be able to find his whole blog on there and everything he's done. And you're going to want to go ahead and look for his article on Army Painter on the Quick Shade. So thank you, Tillman. I want to thank everyone for your comments about episode 64. I got to say that since November 1st, when it was released, episode 64 has been downloaded 71 times. And that's pretty amazing for me. Episodes do pretty well, all in all. I mean, if you had looked at our, you know, Podcasting by the Numbers blog post, you're going to see that, like, say, for example, in October, that episode 63 was downloaded 87 times. And I mean, I posted Podcasting by the Numbers on November 2nd. So that was roughly a month later. And right now, as I'm recording this, and I probably shouldn't say it in case it takes me a while to get this out, but right now while I'm recording this, it's November 13th. And so that's only 13 days later, not even 2 weeks since episode 64 was released, and it's already at 71 downloads. So that's pretty, well, I think it's pretty spectacular. I appreciate each and every one of you who listens to the show, and for 71 downloads so far, that's absolutely amazing. It's fantastic, and hopefully you guys like this issue as well. So that was our mailbag. And I do just want to say about upcoming guests that the one I'm really excited about is that I'm hoping to get my wife on the show in the near future. I think she has some cool insights about what it's like to be married to a gamer, how to deal with a gamer, and all that, because she's not a gamer. So, you know, being married to me and being exposed to all of this, I'm sure it's been eye-opening for her, but I'm sure it hasn't been easy either. In an early issue of Battlekings Magazine, Henry talks about, you know, being a war gamer and, like, hoarding things that other people would call trash, like, you know, cereal boxes and cardboard tubes and all that kind of stuff. And in the issue of this show that I did with Henry, I had mentioned to him that I have to hide that in the car because otherwise, you know, boxes and cardboard tubes and stuff, they end up getting taken and given as toys to our two rabbits, our two bunnies, and they love them. But if I want them for a project, if I want those cardboard tubes or whatever, I need to hide them. So it's not always easy being a gamer and being married to a non-gamer. So I think my wife has some cool insights about that, and I know she's looking forward to it. So that'll be an upcoming show. And, I mean, we have some other guests lined up that'll be coming up in the near future. And I just want to remind everyone to please participate in the TotalCon contest. Send an email to cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. Give me the name of your favorite American Civil War game and tell me why it's your favorite. And then you could win one of these fantastic prizes, either a free weekend pass or one of three free day passes to TotalCon 2012. So, as always, thank you guys. Thank you for listening. Thank you for welcoming me into your lives. And as always, keep on gaming. Thanks. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Axis and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127games.com. This recording is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter and Facebook. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew M. and Court N. for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.